The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain podcast on ESPN Radio.
Who's the most disrespected quarterback of the last two decades in the NFL? It's not Ben Roethlisberger. It's not Matt Stafford. It's not Russell Wilson. I'll tell you who it is. Coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. You can try to answer it before I get there at 888-729-3776. Earlier, we announced ESPN's going to be doing a 9-part documentary series. No, not on the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan, but on Tom Brady and his 9 Super Bowl appearances. It's entitled The Man in the Arena, Tom Brady. And I asked Nuno, double-check that for me. I believe that's a presidential speech. I'll bet you Joe Tessitore, ESPN announcer, holy moly host, which starts its second season on ABC tonight, I'll bet you Joe Tessitore knows who the Man in the Arena speech was issued by. Tell me you do, Tess.
It's Teddy Roosevelt, bro. Come on. That's pure Teddy Roosevelt right there.
It's good stuff, too, isn't it? It's really good stuff.
It is. And listen, at the end of the day, you know, an NFL player or a bunch of broadcasters, we can sit here and talk about being the men in the arena and whatnot. So it's a little different in the reality of being the men in the arena of facing real stuff. And a lot of people right now in our country are facing real stuff. But it is a great all-time passage and very, very relatable and inspirational for many in the sports business.
I'll tell you what, coming up in about 10 minutes, I'm going to read you that. It's not long, presidential speech.
It's
really
not.
Good. It's really good and really inspirational. I'm going to tell you a quick story, Tess.
If you've dealt with any sort of criticism in your life, which having been on Monday Night Football, I would know a thing or two about that, it's a great read.
I would imagine you do. And you know what, Tess, as well, as somebody who has issued a good amount of criticism in his life, like me, I think it's a good read for that as well. I've received it, and I've dished it out. So I think it's good life lesson for everybody involved. Let me tell you a quick story, Tess. Back in my day when I was doing some news and politics, I was working at CNN. I was doing a show with the former governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer. And he had that speech. He had that speech framed on his shelf and, in fact, named the show after its Parker Spitzer demise in the arena. He's a big fan. He was in a lot of arenas. I want to make that clear. But in that moment in time, it wasn't the political arena. It wasn't the controversy arena. It was television arena. But big, big inspiration for one-time governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer.
No doubt. No doubt. How have you been, Kane? I know we caught up earlier tonight, but it is nice to be on the air with you outside of our normal football season chats. What have you learned during this time?
What have I learned? That's a good question. Well, I haven't been as productive as I was ambitiously thinking I would be through this time. You know the truth? Here's something I'm proud of, and here's something I'm embarrassed of, okay? When this started, a couple of things. I thought, all right, I'm going to get in shape. I have time. I've got it at my disposal. I'm going to do it. And I did a good job of that, Tess. I've been getting after that. I also said I'm going to read some books. And let me tell you something, Tess. I've streamed a lot of movies, and I have read 0 books. And I am very ashamed.
Oh, see, I find that disappointing because I think that was one of the great gifts that we were all given during this quarantine is the ability to really have time to devour some good books that have been on the list.
What's the best book you've devoured during this time, Joe Tessitore?
Say Nothing. The book of the IRA and the abduction of Gene McConville in the early 1970s in Belfast and how it all links back to evidence that was here stateside, and it spans 50 years of the IRA and the troubles in Northern Ireland, and specifically detailing one case of the abduction of a mother of 10 who is in her 30s. It's a fascinating read. And then I am in the midst of The Splendid and the Vile, the story of Winston Churchill's 1 year from becoming prime minister through the occupation of France and the bombing of London. And it's over the course of 1 year. And there are many, many points and examples of leadership and communication there in that book written by Eric Larson that are very relatable to what's going on in our country and our world today as well.
Couple of good recommendations. I've read some Eric Larson books. I read Devil in the White City, so I'll have to check that one out as well. Hey, I want to ask something else of Joe Tessitore here. He's asked me what I've been doing through this quarantine. I hope you don't mind me asking this. I know that your son plays for Boston College. He's a kicker, and I know he's been home like everybody else during this time.
Yes.
How's he training? He's a Division I athlete.
He's a punter for Coach Hafley. So, you know, fortunately at his position, he can get out onto his old high school football field and nobody's around. And the only downside to that is that my right arm feels like it's going to fall off because I'm snapping underhand to him about, you know, 60 to 80 times, four times a week. Well, it's a lot of fun to be out there, but, you know, he can still get through. You know, Coach Hafley and that staff has been excellent with the way they've gone about trying to keep normality to the BC players' day. So they wake up in the morning and they do Zoom meetings with your position group the way you normally would be in your position group. They'll run offense, defense, special team meeting. They'll have a team meeting. And then he, you know, he follows a strength and conditioning protocol and checks in with who's been assigned as their leader within their position group. So all the specialists have somebody. And then he has his normal Zoom classes. And so he treats it like a normal day as if he's on campus. He just happens to be here, you know, being spoiled by his mom.
Joe Tessitore, who's been our host for Monday Night Football, top-ranked boxing.
I'm getting a dirty look right now as I say that, King.
No, you shouldn't get a dirty look. What,
Honestly, listen, all these college athletes who are home right now, they're working their butts off, but it's all the same. They want to get back. You know, they miss their teammates. They miss their roommates, and they want to get to competition. They put so much hard work in.
I can only imagine. I'm optimistic it's going to happen. Are you? I'm optimistic that football will
be
back.
Oh, very much so. Yes, very optimistic that and especially this week, I think there's been so much news this week that tells you, okay, here, you know, we're going to be able to do this. I think you're going to have conference football at the least, non-conference games and an adapted schedule where you can. I think they're going to make every attempt to start on time. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. But yes, I'm very bullish on the fact that there will be some form of a college football season.
Top ranked boxing, Monday Night Football, and holy moly, among other things, by the way.
Joe Tessitore, yeah. How about that?
Our ESPN announcer, second season debuts tonight on ABC. Tell
me
about.
Are you sick of the commercials yet, King?
Are you done
watching every commercial break on ABC and everything on social media of seeing
you
holy
and Rob
moly commercials?
Yes.
Riddle, and we're going nuts because, you know, and we go so nuts and we get delusional because we film Holy Moly overnight from about 7:30 at night. We get on the set, you know, we get to the course at about 4:35 o'clock in the afternoon, and we walk through and we see all the new holes and we go through everything and who we're going to be dealing with that night. We get to the set about 7:30, and we come off that set at about 5 a.m. Let me repeat that, 5 a.m. So the two of us are up there in that golf tower. And we are calling extreme mini golf with people getting bashed and battered and bruised and, you know, high velocity zip lines in the totem poles and, you know, fire breathing dragons engulfing them in flames and, you know, thrown by windmills, you know, into a 12-foot drop into cold water. And the things that come out of our mouth and the reactions we may have when we get done filming a day, I couldn't tell you one thing that happened. We're just out of our mind nuts. Yeah, we're delirious.
I had Tyrone Woodley on not long ago, UFC fighter, and he's involved in the Titan Games. And I asked him this, so I'm going to ask you the same thing. I mean, it is a television show, but it's also a competition, a live competition, right? So you don't get to re-rack stuff. You don't get to, like, do double takes and all that, right?
No. We have, and especially this year, and I would tell you the biggest difference between Holy Moly Season 1 and Season 2 is the level of golfer. We have Olympians. We have folks who played on the pro tour. We have NCAA golfers. We have those who, you know, play in these miniature golf tournaments or in the World Series of putting. And they're out there going for it and trying to make their way through the episodes so they can be one of the 12 champions to get to the Holy Moly postseason, the championship round, where you're going to have one putt for $250,000. So, yes, as much as it plays as a buddy comedy, right? I mean, that's really what it plays as, a buddy comedy and a little bit of Wipeout and a little bit of Ninja. At the end of the day, it's a legitimate sports competition with $250,000 for one single putt. So they're going for it, yes.
Joe Tessitore, holy moly, second season debuts tonight on ABC. You know what, I want to say something. You know, I don't know why I want to say it. You want one, Joe Tessitore, in my time at ESPN, maybe because it's a surprise to me, probably a surprise to you too as well, Tess, and maybe a surprise to the listener, one of my favorite dudes who I've hit it off with, mostly behind the scenes, but you could have heard us on the air over the last 2 or 3 years talking together, but absolutely one of my favorite dudes at ESPN, Joe Tessitore.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I just don't know, you know, it's funny, I'm sitting here analyzing Extreme Mini Golf with you, and you're asking me, is there a legit competition? Am I really a game show host at this point, or would you consider this legitimate play-by-play?
I didn't. I did not say.
I was on a Zoom call with a bunch of ABC game show hosts, and now I'm thinking, wait a minute, is this foreign for me now to go and speak on the radio as a sports analyst and sports commentator, or am I a game show host right now on the line?
First of all, let me tell you something. I've heard what Alec Trebek and Pat Sajak make, and I've heard about the work schedule.
Oh, bro. let me tell you something. Alec Baldwin, Anthony Anderson, Strahan, Riggle, and myself were on a Zoom call earlier today with Steve Harvey. You want to talk about what somebody makes hosting a game show now?
Yes, yes.
My man Steve Harvey, I mean, you talk about busting chops with somebody. I mean, they were tearing it
Tess,
up with Harvey.
I don't know what Harvey's paycheck is for the Family Feud right now, but I do remember,
Google and your jaw will drop.
I remember hearing, like, Sajak and Trebek and those guys were making, what, I don't know, $10, $20 million a year for, like, 2 weeks of work, because they tape it all in 2 weeks. It's not like they have live Jeopardies every night or every – they do that in a quick turnaround, maybe a month's worth of work, and have a nice next 11 months.
Well, and the equity piece when you get to those jobs. Were you a Bob Barker guy? Were you a – Chuck Woolery guy? Were you a Wink Martindale guy? Or were you old school Hollywood Squares Peter Marshall? I peg you as a Peter Marshall.
No.
A Gene Rayburn with a long mic? Is that where you were headed?
I don't know if I was a guy. I don't know if I had a team on this, but maybe Barker was on in my house more than others.
All right, listen. 9 o'clock tonight on ABC. I expect a full review from Nuno tomorrow. Maybe
Done.
Even with a sock full of the winning putt. Tonight to see who will be one of the 12 champions that makes it to the season finale and putts for $250,000. By the way, Steph Curry designed the championship hole. So it's a specially designed championship hole by Curry.
There we go. All right. Full review by Nuno tomorrow. Joe Tessitore here on the Will Cain Show. Thanks, man.
All right, Cain. Always good to catch up with you. Be well.
Take care, bud. Nuno, will you be able to pull yourself away from CBS? I hope there's no Blue Bloods or CSI episodes tonight. Hopefully you'll get to watch Holy Moly on ABC.
There is nothing new on at this point during the week.
You're all caught up. That's good to know. The most disrespected quarterback in the NFL coming up on the Will Cain Show.
How exciting.
Will Cain.
Anthony, New Hampshire. Did you call in last week under the guise of Tony from New Hampshire?
No, I didn't. There are probably more than two Anthonys in New Hampshire.
Don't worry. More Will Cain is coming up.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
What does Stanford head coach David Shaw think of the Rooney Rule? What's he think of that momentarily proposed rule to incentivize hiring minorities in the NFL with improved draft stock? What does David Shaw think about the way to move forward to increase minority hiring in the NFL? That's coming up. Plus, who's the most disrespected quarterback in the league? You can take a guess. 888-729-3776. Last 20 years, most disrespected dude. That's coming up. But I need to do a little housekeeping. I want to clear up a couple of things that have been lingering throughout the Will Cain show today. Okay, number one, the man in the arena, the speech, the name, the new Tom Brady documentary on ESPN, which will debut 1 year from now, 9-part series featuring or focusing on all of his Super Bowl appearances. I promise you I would read what the title references, the man in the arena, colon Tom Brady. It's from a Teddy Roosevelt speech. Joe Tessitore knew it, and we both liked it. It goes like this. I think this is worth it for everybody, if you've ever had a critic in your life of any kind. Quote, "It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error or shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat." That's the man in the arena. Nice, Bubba.
Got it.
It's awesome speech. I don't think it needed the music, but I appreciate the effort, Bubs.
I think it needed a little extra.
I'm not so sure. Speaking of mistakes by Bubba, there's also been this conversation going on in the show. I don't know if you saw the news story, but I believe it was a couple in Virginia. Middle of the road, stumble upon $1 million. And Bubs asked the question to everybody else, Nuno, Mike A., and myself on the show, what do you do? Now, I think everybody else on the show thought the answer was pretty obvious, except for Bubba, who thought, I might just get away with it. So you think there's a way to keep that $1 million, Bubs?
Well, I would like to know some more details because, yeah, they were driving in Virginia and they came across two trash bags. And I'm just picturing them kind of in the middle of nowhere, Virginia. So let's, and you find two trash bags, two, and inside there's just plastic baggies with cash. And all it says on the bags was cash vault, which is a little sketchy. And then it's just two bags of $1 million. But there's no one around. I mean, I don't know. You know, what if you're just in a road where no one's around, a desolate road, there's no cameras, it's just two trash bags, and it's $1 million. And what do you, I don't know. I mean, I think.
I think Bubba's, you can.
I'm not saying I wouldn't return it. I'm just saying I think
Bubba's going to make my decision easy for what type of movies we need to watch. I think we might have to watch gangster movies just to show Bubba what would happen if he, you know, just decided to take that money.
You decided it's going to be gangster movies?
No,
movies?
Because.
Was it because you didn't know how to define cult movies?
First of all, I Googled it. Google came back with the name of these movies, and then I said, oh, what about this? And then you guys, being insensitive jerks, laughed at me, mocked me, said, I don't know what I'm talking about, ha ha.
Well, you said Goonies was a cult movie.
It was on the list when I Googled it.
What else did he say, Mike, eh? Did he say, like, Titanic was a cult movie,
no,
too?
I didn't
was
say
his
Titanic.
List Goonies and Titanic? I can't remember. What else? You got to bring Mike A. up, I think. Hey, Bubba. Let me just offer you a couple of things like this.
Well, let's just spin it around to you real quick. Say you're in the Smoky Mountains, all right? So you just find it desolate, no one around. No one. Empty road. No one. No cameras. You're from another state. No one even knows who you are. There's no ring doorbell. There's nothing. It's just two trash bags in the middle of nowhere.
No.
What are you going to do? Are you going to leave it or are you going to?
Probably leave it. I don't know.
Because they took it initially thinking it was trash. And then, they took it thinking it was trash, got home, found out it was $1 million. And then they went to the police.
I think I'd turn it in hoping there's some kind of reward. But let me offer you a couple things. I know you're not a big movie guy. I would suggest you watch No Country for Old Men. You don't go around picking up random money because people don't just go, whoops, lost my $1 million. They go looking for their $1 million. And the kind of people that come looking for $1 million aren't the kind of people you want looking for you. And if there's a note that says cash vault, might I suggest it's even worse Because now it's the biggest gang of all coming after you. The federal government. I mean, they are coming, and let me tell you something. Those bills are probably serialized and marked. You ain't getting away with that $1 million. You ain't doing it.
I think you might be able to.
I don't think you're getting away with it. You wouldn't have gotten away with it in No Country for Old Men or a cult movie like Nuno said, like Back to the Future.
Now look, you gotta be.
He did
you
say
be,
back,
first of all,
hold on.
Here you go.
That's crazier than this getting away.
So
with
here
like,
you
he
go.
Said Back to the Future
it
was
says
a cult
right
movie.
Here, 35 must-watch cult films from the 80s.
It looks like you're on a French website.
Okay, the French know something.
You're on Vogue from France,
right? The French know something. And
we
this
can
is
all see
English.
Your screen. It's Vogue.fr.
They must know something. Blues Brothers.
They think Back to the Future is a cult.
Star Wars. They listen to Star Wars.
They have Star Wars. They have Star Wars on there.
I think it's just movies that hasn't gotten to France yet.
Nuno, come on.
Listen,
that's worse than Bubba thinking he'd get away with the million.
No, because Bubba would end up dead. Oh, here you go. From IMDb, best cult movies from the 80s.
From where?
IMDb, right?
IMDb.
There's a D in there.
There's that D you've been looking for, Nuno.
So it has, right? The
Remember that D you were asking about yesterday, Nuno?
Beverly Hills Cop?
We found that D.
Of course you forgot the D.
Which D? I know, the one on IMDb.
Breakfast Club, see?
Okay, all right. So maybe it's gangster movies, maybe it's cult movies, but Bubba ain't getting away with that million. 888-729-3776. Who's the most disrespected quarterback in the NFL? Coming up on the Will Cain Show.
Which D?
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school, or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
I know I've been teasing it, but everybody overlooks this guy. Most disrespected quarterback over the last two decades. I promise it's coming up on the Will Cain Show. But I've been sitting down, I've told you, having some long conversations. Yesterday, really good one with David Shaw, head coach of the Stanford Cardinal. And as one of the few African-American head coaches in a Power 5 conference in college football, I asked David Shaw what he thought about the Rooney Rule, about the NFL's now tabled proposal to incentivize minority hiring with improved draft status. And how do we fix a problem if we don't even know how to diagnose it? Here's some of my conversation on a podcast right now, which you can get in the Will Cain Show feed, with Stanford head coach David Shaw. Coach, one of the reasons I call you an outlier is because you have so much direct experience in this particular issue and many others. But it's not just an intellectual exercise for you. You have, of course, your name, which has consistently been floated in NFL circles. You have the experience with your dad as well. So you bring firsthand experience, not just theoretical experience to this. So I want to ask you this, and I'm genuinely curious, and I want to say some things, and I want you to hear is me working through this process. What I've always wondered is, how do you diagnose a problem? So what does a league who has a problem with hiring minority candidates look like? And then conversely, what does a league that is healthy and open-minded towards minority candidates look like? I'm always looking at it and saying, well, the percentage game doesn't seem to fit. 75% of the players in the league are African-American. Does that mean 75% of the coaches should be? No, probably not. 13% of the population is African-American. Does that mean 13% of the coaches should be? No, probably not. But I always struggle with, well, if we can't diagnose the symptoms of a problem, how do we diagnose what health looks like and therefore whether or not our policies are working? You see what I'm saying here? I'm not denying the existence of bias, and I do not believe in every occasion that the best, most merit-filled candidate always wins. But I do wonder, how do we diagnose and how do we fix if we can't diagnose this problem?
That is the biggest, very well-worded question. And this is not a defeatist answer, even though that sounds defeatist. You can't answer that question. I've gotten to the point of saying it's absolutely impossible. We cannot push for equity by any measure because we're not talking about being a lawyer. You know, who knows the law the best and who can argue the best in court. You're talking about the head coach, and as we talked about before, you know, John Gruden, are you looking for an X's and O's head coach that can coach the quarterback? Are you looking for a CEO head coach that can run the organization, like a Bill Belichick, who can coach offense, defense, and special teams and run the draft? Or are you looking for the organizational kind of head coach that, you know, allows assistants to kind of do the scheme? So there's no true job description for this position because it goes from not just from franchise to franchise, sometimes from year to year. You're an NFL owner, and 1 year you have a really young team and you have a fast team and you think you want an offensive head coach. And then 4 years later, like, hey, you know what? We've got a great young offensive coordinator. I don't want an offensive head coach. I'm going to let that coordinator run the offense. I want a defensive head coach to help straighten out my defense because my defense hasn't been good. So every hiring cycle, you're not just looking for one thing. Each franchise is looking for something maybe different than they wanted 4 years ago. So these job descriptions change all the time. The state of your franchise changes all the time. So, you know, you're Miami, and gosh, you know what? We want a young head coach who understands organizational structure, and we're going to grow with him. So, you know, they pluck a young black coach from the Patriots and say, hey, this is what we're looking for. We need all of this together, and we're going to grow and build this thing together. Some places like, hey, we want a guy to come in right now because we think we got a chance to win, right? We want an experienced head coach. Let's just go. So the question you asked is a great question. I just don't truly believe there's an answer. You can't lean on percentages. You can't lean on facts and figures because we're this head coaching thing, it's so nebulous. It's so strange. I've called it the highest paying temp job in America. You know, it's a short-term position that you pretend is going to be a long-term position. And there's so many facets to that feed into whether or not you're going to be successful that have nothing to do with you. Personnel, injuries, perception, you know, a tip pass that you end up losing a game that you should win. You go from being coach of the year and going to the Super Bowl 1 year to 2 years later being fired. So that's where I am. I don't think it's a negative attitude. I think it's a reality of, you know, what our job needs to be. By our, I mean all of college athletics, all of NFL football, is to develop the best candidates possible so that when a job comes open, there is a diverse pool from people with different races, different ages. There are a lot of young female coaches getting into the business, and in the next few years, some of them are going to be coordinators, right? Some of them are going to be potential head coaching candidates. Not a lot of people are going to like it, but when you really look at it and how John Gruden hired me, man, if you are the best person and you know what to do, come work for me. So, but once again, it's our job to cultivate and develop the best candidates for these jobs.
As Stanford head coach David Shaw, it's on a podcast with me, hour-long, full of good stuff like what you just heard right there, back and forth. I don't do this because you're supposed to or it's obligatory. Man, just an impressive dude, an impressive conversation. I hope you go check it out. I think there's a lot of insight there. David Shaw, head coach of the Stanford Cardinal, on the Will Cain Show podcast feed for a deeper conversation. Who is the most disrespected quarterback in the league of the last 2 years? I think there's something you should notice about that word I used, disrespected. Bubba, what letter does disrespected start with?
D.
I'm sorry. Which D?
Which D?
Yeah, which D?
The D.
In England?
Which D is in a northern England town on the banks of the River Skern?
Oh, that D. But not in disrespected. Like this quarterback over the last 2 decades. That's coming up on the Will Cain Show.
The Will Cain Show is everywhere you are. On your radio, your computer, your phone, or just tell your smart speaker. Play ESPN Radio. More Will Cain coming up.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
I'm going to do it. Who's the most disrespected quarterback of the last two decades? Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. But Spencer's been on hold for a while, and I want to hear from him. What's up, Spence?
Yo, Will Cain, thank you so much for taking my call. I really love your show.
Thank you.
All right, so I agree with you 100% that I think we've got some positive momentum going to get sports back, and I'm hoping and praying that we can have fans in the stands. But let's just operate under the premise that the NFL is going to do something similar to what the Ohio State Athletic Director mentioned earlier. And, you know, let's say they restrict fans to like 20,000 people in the stadium at a time. I think I've got a decent idea for the NFL to recoup some of those potential losses.
All right.
Just bear with me for a second. Imagine
give it to me quick.
It would be amazing if they hashed something out with HBO or some other streaming service to bring us a 17-week, they could do playoffs, Hard Knocks series, and they do Hard Knocks for every single team for 17 weeks. Like, just imagine how awesome it would be to see what Odell and Baker are doing in the locker room when the Browns start 2-7 again. Or I don't even have to go into all the potential amazing things that would come out of this. It's an idea. I would like to hear your feedback because I really respect your opinion. But anyway, great show. Also, Matt Ryan has had Julio Jones, the best receiver of the last decade. So you got to factor that into your evaluation of him. Thank you.
Okay. We'll call that a deep tease. Not that deep. It's a tease to what's coming ahead on the most disrespected quarterback in the NFL. First, my response is to a Spencer's idea. I mean, it would be one hell of a lot of fun. I would love to see. And of course, we wouldn't. That's a fascinating question. If they were publishing a Hard Knocks every week on 32 teams, how many would you actually watch? How many of those would you keep up with? That would be interesting. Do you watch all the All or Nothings? Do you watch all the Hard Knocks? Do you watch all of the behind-the-scenes documentaries? Or do you do the teams you really care about? It'd be even worse than watching however many games you watch a week. It'd be more of a commitment. But I think it would be a hell of a lot of fun. Here's the problem with your idea, Spencer. It would recoup some revenue, but not enough. I mean, when we're talking about fans in the stands, we're talking about massive percentages. 40% for the NBA. I gotta assume it's close to 50 or more for Major League Baseball. And we have heard yesterday from Laura Rutledge, ESPN's college football reporter, that it's upwards of 75% of the revenue for college football teams. That's game day concessions, ticket sales, merchandising, alcohol sales, everything on that day. You're just not going to make that up with a TV series. The numbers are too big. So what I think that means, what I've increasingly come to the realization of, my long-term take, money and intolerance are going to drive the day. People intolerant of the current situation and necessity for money, individually and organizationally and economically, it's going to drive us back to normal. We're going to rip the Band-Aid off. It's probably going to be not a Goldilocks situation of not too hot, not too cold, just the right amount of fans in stands. It's more probably going to be rip it and go, because otherwise it's economic suicide. When you're talking about percentages like that, you're talking about economic suicide. Look at New York. New York is dying. It's going to have to come back. Who's the most disrespected quarterback over the last two decades? I asked that earlier in the show, and it's interesting. The names that came in, both from friends of the show like Dan Orlovsky and listeners, were names like Matt Stafford, Tony Romo. That's right, Tony Romo. Ben Roethlisberger, and Russell Wilson. But there's one guy who is more disrespected than all of them. All of those guys get some level of credit. Even if it's not enough, they get some level of credit. But there was a fascinating graphic up that showed expected or points contributed or added by a quarterback over the last two decades. So what that quarterback did to literally affect the outcome of a game. I know it's one arbitrary stat, but I thought it was a fascinating one that shows an accumulation of value over time. And of course, Manning stood out for essentially the first decade, 2000-2010. The second decade, Brady and Breeze catch up to him, and those three stand apart. Other guys that did really well were Kurt Warner, who had a really nice career, Rivers and Roethlisberger on another level. Then you drop down another, you'll see guys like Rodgers and Romo, who are doing really well. It's kind of fascinating to look back deep and say, oh, yeah, yeah, Mark Bulger was good. Dante Culpepper was pretty good for a while. Trent Green in that Kansas City offense, nice. But there's one guy who has jumped. I think he's above Roethlisberger now. I know he's above Romo now. I believe on this particular stat, he's something like sixth over the last two decades. And he's, in my mind, one of the most disrespected, least credited quarterbacks in the NFL. And it's Matt Ryan of the Atlanta Falcons. Matt Ryan has won Offensive Rookie of the Year. Matt Ryan has won an NFL MVP, 38 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Matt Ryan has passed for almost 50,000 career yards and taken his team to a Super Bowl wherein he was up 28-3. Now, is that what we're holding against him? The fact that the Falcons lost that game, like it's a branded loss and nobody will give him full credit for the quarterback he's been. Is it because the Falcons don't get a ton of attention? Is it because Matt Ryan's personality isn't that dynamic? He's not demanding attention? I don't know. But Matt Ryan, I believe, is the most disrespected quarterback I can think about. The least credited. And by comparison, one of the best quarterbacks over the last two decades. Romo didn't get enough credit. Roethlisberger honestly doesn't get enough credit. I don't think Warner probably even gets enough credit. But the most disrespected? That would be Matt Ryan of the Atlanta Falcons. Did we decide on the movie category? You have one more day to figure this out, Nuno. Will it be cult movies? Will it be gangster movies? Or are you now going to try this new thing, movies that begin with the letter D?
Which what? D? D?
What's it going to be?
Find out tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.